Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. We are off and running on the first Friday in May. It's May 2nd, 2025. My buddy Tom Fairbanks is on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our show. We've got a great weekend lined up. Other than, Tom, I think you know, going to be nice and cool for this time of year, but looks like the winds are really going to be kicking up Sunday, right?
Sunday will be a breezy day. But you know, this 2025 is moving right along. Do you realize that next month we're going to be halfway through the year?
It is hard to believe.
It is.
Wow. So far, 2025, going well for me. I hope it's going well for everybody else. The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from central Tucson in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We're part of the Bustos Media Center. My goodness, five radio stations now under one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk. In January, we began our 15th year with our radio program, my 37th year now in Tucson radio and television. We have our worldwide live listening podcast of the show at buckmastershow.com, and you can also live stream the show at kvoi.com. And our live line, when we do our telephone interviews, that number 790-2040, that's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun and Tucson Spotlight. My co-media host this week, my friend Tim Steller, the award-winning columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. It seems like all of us have a little frog in our throats these days from these allergies.
Oh, yeah. So much wind, so much pollen, so many blooms and blossoms.
Yeah. So we will push through. Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover is with us, social ethicist. He has worked with migrating people along the southwest border for 40 years. Reverend Hoover holds degrees in journalism, religion, social ethics, and political science. He's a native of West Texas. Dr. Hoover is a pastor of progressive mainline congregations. He's also the founder of the Humane Borders effort, which is celebrating this weekend its 25th anniversary. But it goes beyond Humane Borders. He's founded and led, actually, several nonprofits. He writes about his efforts with Humane Borders. Creating Humane Borders is the title of the book. And that book kind of details how it all started, and I'm sure he'll share with us in a few moments how the whole thing was created. His current work focuses on providing migrants, especially from Central America, the information they need to successfully navigate Mexico and survive crossing the border. Reverend Hoover is the 2006 recipient of Mexico's National Human Rights Award, which was bestowed by the then President Felipe Calderon. His life work is preserved in special collections at the University of Arizona Library. Reverend Hoover, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back here. It's been 4 or 5 years since I've been in studio.
Yeah, we've had you on, try to get you on maybe every quarter or at least every 6 months, but that has been telephonically since you moved over to Albuquerque, where you're very happy over there. But you're going to be coming back more often, I guess.
I think so. We have some things in, not ready to announce, but things in the planning that'll bring me back here episodically.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Tim? How are things going? Good to have you with us.
They are as they have been, which is crazy busy.
Yeah, they really are. Okay, Humane Borders. How did all of that begin? What was the 30,000 foot view of Humane Borders?
Well, briefly, in 99, at the end, the medical examiner's office started identifying bodies in the morgue that were determined to be undocumented people. And some of my friends and colleagues in this city and from various congregations got together several times and said, what in the world can we do? And then in June of 2000, we had this big meeting. There was 87 people there, I think. And we said, what can we do to provide humanitarian assistance? What can we do to advocate for policies that would change things? And we founded Humane Borders on that date.
Mm-hmm. And Did it change things?
It has changed things. We began putting out water stations on federal, state, tribal, a little bit, and private properties. And we put out the blue barrels, the blue flag that are familiar to people in southern Arizona. Center for Applied Spatial Analysis at the University of Arizona did a statistical analysis and said it is very significant to have water stations in the locations where migrants are known to be dying, and it reduces them. And they, the comparison that they did it with was property on the Tarn-Othum Nation. To this date, 43% on average of the deaths in the Tucson sector of the Border Patrol still occur on the Tarn-Othum Nation. So they don't do anything specifically other than traditional law enforcement there.
And so the blue barrels were not welcome? They were not,
welcome
there?
No.
And was there a reason given for that?
No, I don't want to get real. Right. No, I don't want to get real rough, but basically this is that would just attract people, and our logic was, no, if you move it away from the communities, they'll go down that route instead.
Oh, okay. Here's Tim Steller.
You mentioned the geographic analysis that led you to some decisions. Can you go back on that and just talk about how mapping and the red dots and all that, how that contributed to what Humane Borders ended up doing?
I actually started in the fall of 2000 plotting the migrant deaths with a friend of ours, a volunteer, Miss Johnson, that died tragically in a car wreck. And we started plotting where those locations were, and we were using the analysis to find out the surface management responsibility. In other words, whose land is this? Where is it happening? And could we strategically place water stations south of there, closer to the border, so that they would have encountered water before they got in such desperate straits? And then we started applying for permits. We went to Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument, Cabeza Prieta National Wildlife Refuge, and the Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge first. Those were the first three. Oregon Pipe invited us. They really wanted it. They said, come on, people. We're tired of picking up dead bodies.
Yeah.
And then we applied at Cabeza, and Cabeza declined our permit in April. And then in May, they picked up 14 dead bodies. So that's when the West Wing in Washington, D.C., called down to the regional office, which is in Albuquerque, to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, and get some damn water out there for those people.
Wow.
And that was George Bush's administration. Very different from our current administration.
Yeah, that was in 2001, wasn't it, when those 14 people...
Yes, in May.
Right. So the idea of water barrels, I know it had some political opposition when it was first being discussed.
Oh, yes.
Well, talk about that opposition. I'm interested in how the opposition evolved over time. But initially, it's just people. What were the arguments against?
The first word that ever got published about that was this lady says, "My God, with those blue flags, they're going to make Southern Arizona look like a Walmart parking lot with all this stuff." And so it just started. Instantaneously. And then, well, they broke the law. They deserve to die, all this other stuff. They didn't care about how much it cost Pima County. They didn't care about anything else. So it was rabid from the beginning. And less than a week after we really went public, I already had death threats from the Aryan Nation.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I can't remember what year you left off with Humane Borders, but over that time, were there physical attacks on vandalism or sabotage of the structures that you put out, the water barrels and other related
During
stuff?
My tenure, that was very minimal, and it was almost always on an Arizona State Trust land location where the general public has pretty unfettered access, and a couple of times on county properties, again, where the public had some access. We had never had any vandalism on any of the federal properties or on any of the private properties that I was aware of.
Interesting, considering that, I guess, in recent years, that has been a real factor, especially last 6 years or so.
But it was still true. That was primarily either in the Buenos Aires Refuge, which is federal, but it has limited access for people. But there was a lot of destruction on the some county properties down south off of Aravaca Road.
Had a question coming in on the Bill Buckmaster Facebook messaging for Reverend Hoover. The question is, Tucson is home to the sanctuary movement. What does Dr. Hoover think about this administration, the Trump administration, saying churches are no longer sanctuaries for immigrants?
Well, I was a member of the sanctuary movement back in 1986. So that's how I got started in all this. We helped feed 500 migrants a night at Casa Oscar Romero in Brownsville. So I've been at it a long time. And generally speaking, we had good relationships with, back then it was the INS and now it's Customs and Border Protection. And we sort of worked on things together. Border Patrol would bring people to our shelters.
Really?
Because they were special cases and they didn't fit. And mm-hmm. It's like, you can do something for this lady and she reports X, Y, mm-hmm. and Z happened to her. And so, and we had a, we were amiable. During my tenure here, we were in a rather amiable relationship with Border Patrol. Our sector chief went on, became the commissioner, and we just kind of had a hands-off.
So the relationship with federal officials
but
was
it is
good.
No longer that way.
No. And why?
They just want to say that we're so much in charge and we'll take charge anywhere we want to anytime. But it's also being manifest in Texas with the lieutenant governor. People don't understand the governor doesn't run Texas. The lieutenant governor does.
Really?
And yeah, the governor's a showcase thing. That George Bush never really administered anything. So the lieutenant governor over there has come after Annunciation House in El Paso, and they want to close the doors. I was at the big press conference that they had there, and they're still fighting that in court. But basically, it's state and federal want to say that schools, hospitals, churches, nonprofit organizations are not off limits, and here we come. There's a story this morning about DHS people standing outside of a hospital room where a woman is recovering from giving birth at TMC. So it's unheard of. It's just unbelievable.
Mm. Tim Steller, pick it up.
I remember back in the day, there were times when it first started, there was a question of, will this work? Will people be using this water? Was there a way to measure consumption, or is it just impossible to know?
Every Wednesday at 5 o'clock, we had our meetings and we gave a consumption report from every water station with all these. All that data is over there at University of Arizona. And so annually we were dispensing anywhere around 70,000 gallons of water were being consumed every year, even in the beginning. So we never were able to put out as much as we wanted to and have access to the locations because we had to have access through where vehicles could go. And so the Samaritans became a mobile version of Humane Borders, and they hand-carried water to extremely remote locations. And they also, their consumption rates grew, and they recorded all that. So all this information is available in the archives.
Early
on, even the Border Patrol one day in the Arizona Daily Star said that they apprehended a group of 86 people out on the gas pipeline that runs from Ajo up towards Gila Bend, and that the last known water that they had secured was from a cache that we had on the what's called the Ajo block of U.S. Mm-hmm. Fish and Wildlife Service, mm-hmm. and it's part of the Cabeza. And it says without that water, a bunch of them would have perished.
So what do you, lately we hear a resurgence of the argument, I think especially of hearing it out of the Pima County Board, but I've heard it elsewhere as well, that, these efforts are just attracting people. People count on that water. They're using, orienting their paths so that they can hit those water stations on the way in.
Well, we hope they do orient that mm-hmm. path and follow that and figure out where they are. We hope that all of their guides know where the water is because more of them will live. And the Border Patrol puts their seismic detectors and other surveillance equipment out there. So they know everybody knows what's going on. the Border Patrol helicopter pilots fly our blue flags out there like golf pins. So, you know, we don't care about that.
Yeah.
We want them to live and walk another day. But in the words of Dan Ekstrom, nobody's crossing the border to get a cup of CAP blended water. That's not what this is about. That's not a reward. It's literally life and death.
All right, let's
let me say one more thing. I mean, people coming here from the traditional Mayan homelands do not have in their lived experience the experience of walking for days and not seeing water, not seeing another human being, and not being in this kind of heat. So this is relief.
All right, let's take a break right here. One of our great sponsors, I'm so proud of the lineup of people that support our program, got some great partners. And the newest partner is Pima Council on Aging. Support comes from PCOA, where the hidden costs of aging, like loneliness, falls, financial stress, don't go unnoticed. Your gift helps older adults stay safe and independent. Donate today, please, at PCOA.org. And if you've got any questions about healthy living and aging, please call their number, 520-305-3410. It's Friday on the Buckmaster Show. We always bring in on Friday a Friday Focus interview, a newsmaker. Today it is the Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover, the founder of Humane Borders, which is celebrating this weekend its 25th anniversary. Tim Steller, the award-winning columnist from the Arizona Daily Star, is joining me in our interview with Reverend Hoover. We'll be right back on the show.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover is with us, the founder of Humane Borders. And his book, Creating Humane Borders, is now available online, correct, Reverend?
Yes, sir. That's right. At robinhoover.com, free download. Help yourself.
Tim Steller is here, the award-winning columnist from the Arizona Daily Star. So you mentioned that the Humane Borders was prohibited from putting the water stations on the Tohono O'odham Nation, and their stance has not changed. But migrant advocates, and you probably would agree with this, are warning now that Trump's plan for a military takeover at the southern border is now funneling migrants into that very dangerous area.
Absolutely. You have the Roosevelt Reservation is the 60-foot wide strip from the actual line. Gives a certain amount of access along there. And Trump has declared that part of the military reservation of Fort Huachuca, and there's some other locations that are similarly being considered. They have exempted the reservation of the Tohono Nation. You have two major corridors from Altar and Caborca that come. I've been all over that border from the southern side and 20 miles south, and those are major historic routes of migration for Autumn people and Autumn smugglers who operate in Altar and Caborca, gather these people and direct them into the reservation systematically. This has been going on for 25 years that I know of, and I've even met some of them. So it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. And the only option they have now is the coyotes are going to want to go where there's less resistance, if you will. You can't bring a large group over and say, go apply for asylum. That's not going to work.
Right.
Recent administrations have changed that. So now it's going to be crossing the desert again and be coming up the Baba Keefery Trail, as we refer to it, and exiting into Ironwood Forest National Monument and points north. So expect some deaths.
Tim Steller.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk a little bit about the financial motives and factors here, because as I recall back in the day, so when I first started reporting on this stuff, it was in the late 90s, and it was still possible for a person then to cross the border, a migrant, to cross the border without a smuggler, on their own, word of mouth, that kind of thing, although it had become harder. And then sometime in those next few years, it became something that only smugglers did. First of all, when do you track that to yourself and your experience? And then also, like, this dynamic of increased enforcement and increased costs, can you explain how that works?
Well, let me talk about a bunch of those things, because by our calculations, by 2001, there was probably only 8% of the people using the services of a coyote. Now it's 100%. They control all movement. Even for me, I've had AR-15 stuck in my face in Sonora, and they go, ah, Reverendo, pasale. Thank God they still recognize me. But the finances of all this, the penalties for trafficking people were less than for trafficking drugs, and so you got into that business. And then you figured out ways to combine that traffic sometimes, et cetera. But it turns out that every single thing that the United States government has done to harden the border, either through physically or fiscally or surveillance or personnel, has all backfired. It has created the market for the cartels. It's what gives them their product of service. And every single thing we've done has given billions of dollars to the cartels. The cartels are our product, and we need to take responsibility. And until we reform the policy to where we're not using the coyotes, and you come through the ports of entry documented, inspected, and vaccinated, and several other things, until we change the politics of this, we're not going to see any reform. You cannot reform the law through enforcement.
Now, they are at this current stage in the Trump administration using everything up to and including military forces on the border to try to stop both drugs and migrants. At the moment, it appears to be working in the sense that the traffic is very low. So is that not a counter to the idea that that enforcement can't stop things and only makes the market grow?
You may have taken away some of the cargo, if you will, of the cartels. I don't think it'll last. It didn't cost very much to get somebody to guide you to the border and put 100 people over the border. Any Jake Legg entrepreneur in Altar or Caborca could do that for you. All you need somebody that takes off their apron in the grocery store and says, "I can drive you up there." So you didn't even have to have the cartels to do that. So the real serious work of the cartels is to go across the border. And not, obviously there's going to be a demand for that, and we're going to see an uptick. So I just say get ready.
What is the cost for what and how has that changed the economics?
In 1986, when I first saw a coyote come across the Rio Grande, he was maybe making $20 for however many people he had with him, 3 or 4 or 7, doesn't matter. In Albuquerque, a friend of mine brought his brother across from, he rode the bus from Chihuahua to Juarez, got in a car, went to a location east of El Paso, east of Juarez, crossed. They picked him up in a car and delivered him to Belen, New Mexico, south of Albuquerque, for $7,000.
Wow.
Big money.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, yeah, I mean, an interesting dynamic of this, though, is that during the Biden administration, the crossing part, getting to the border was costly and, of course, controlled by these criminal groups. But then the crossing part, the dynamics changed for that, right? Because then there was the possibility of turning oneself in to seek asylum.
Well, you've always been able to do asylum since 1980.
I guess true, but you would be treated differently under the Biden administration than you were under some administration.
Well, the Biden administration changed the implementation of the 1980 laws and just said no more, and here's a quota. And you got to use CBP-1. You got to try to do all this stuff. But that's not what the national law says. The national law says you can apply for asylum in Galveston, Texas, if you show up in a dinghy. Mm-hmm. So where you cross should not make any difference. The United States Customs and Border Protection and ICE and anybody else that's slamming the door shut and immediately getting rid of people, if you will, removing people, is against the law. That's not constitutional.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious here that many of these people who have like different permits, visas, green cards, it seems like they are all fair game now to be to be deported.
Yes, is that, we have 99 different kinds of visas.
Is it safe to say that unless you are a U.S. citizen,
right,
you should worry?
Yeah, I think citizens should worry.
Even if you're
we've already had multiple reports of Native Americans that kind of been here a long time.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Being picked up, apprehended, and harassed.
Up on the Navajo, land. Yeah. Wow. Tim?
Yeah, I mean, so that changes. There's a cultural thing here, too, and I wonder where you stand on this. There's a sense in the current environment that, like, we're trying to purify, for lack of a better term, who's in the country.
It's not purify, it's eugenics.
Yeah, for lack of who's in the country, you know, and so to get rid of foreigners. I don't know. I'm just curious, through your experience all these years, what is your experience of what the people who you've dealt with who are migrants what do they bring, good, bad, and indifferent, to the country?
Well, the average migrant, if you want to know who's coming, is younger, healthier, less likely to commit crime, bringing an eagerness to work, and so forth, than the general public. We sit there and want to talk about those criminals and this and that and the other coming. Good Lord, if you want to go out here to the intersection of I-19 and Interstate 10 in Tucson and set up a big roadblock, you're going to find all kinds of deadbeat dads and rapists and murderers and all kinds of stuff in, amongst the citizenry. So the numbers just simply do not compare. They're healthier, stronger, more actually typically more conservative and more religious, I don't know, than the general population. Mm-hmm. So to me, they're very desirable. We need to bring them in and love our neighbors to the south like we, oh my God, do love ourselves. This is eugenics. There's a perception in Washington, D.C. and in law enforcement that we're mongrelizing the American race. Mm-hmm. This is not an American race. We're not even a nation. This is a legal political experiment, and we don't know how to operate it. And if we're going to go over there and start slamming the door shut, we're going to end up like Japan, getting old.
When you have a $7,000 a head fee to get in here, that becomes almost, doesn't it, a limiting factor about
No. So where are they starting back in 1993? Okay. One of the assumptions was in the policy, we're not only going to just move people into the desert, we're going to raise the cost of coming in here,
right,
the services. That's a neoliberal economics thing that says, well, just raise the price, it'll change the market,
they won't come.
I got news for you, they're coming. And $7,000 is not an impediment.
Uh-huh.
What it does do is increase the amount of time that that person wants to stay in the United States before going home. It now costs too much money to go home, and it's too dangerous to come back, so that we've broke the back of circularity that used to give us the relief valve and of all the pressure on how long somebody was going to stay here. So when I started 40 years ago, the average migrant didn't even stay 18 months. Now it's 10 to 11 years.
Mm.
And the drive factors in those countries, it's interesting. I mean, they've changed over the years, right? It was just poverty in Mexico, and now it's a variety of
violence.
Well, then, of course, I'm sorry. Going back to the civil wars in Central America, there was that,
because it was Nicaraguans that I was working with in the South Texas in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And Salvadorans.
So where do we go from here?
Well, we got to change the politics of immigration and immigration reform. And both parties, I'm not picking on the Republicans. Democrats have signed off on all these bills.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has just figured out, let's do enforcement first, and then we'll get to the rest of it and pick up the pieces. Enforcement-only politics will never, ever, ever control migration. You can put dampers on it occasionally. It's going to pop up. It's whack-a-mole. We've got to change the politics. We've got to have empathy for people. We need to exempt countries to the south of us from the worldwide quota of visas. We've got to figure out ways of screening and vetting these people and bringing them here legally and minimizing the number of people that are here already undocumented by getting them into some sort of citizenship line or a legal status line. A lot of the people that are in a huge number of the people who are undocumented living in the United States do not want to become citizens, but they would be happy to be here 4 or 5 or 6 more years, go home, rebuild the house, do whatever they want to do. There's people in Phoenix that have got hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank, and they'd be glad to go home. Yeah, but give me a little bit. Yeah, I need to work on my grub stake, and then I'll leave.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to go through these old, worn-out policies of Kennedy and McCain paying penalties and learning English. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do that. They just want to get some money and go home.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, think of it this way. When I was a kid, guys in the oil-field-rich country that I grew up in, West Texas, they would take off and they'd go to work in Saudi Arabia for Aramco for 2 years and come home with 2-year grub stake of tax-free money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we can't open the doors and bring in some of the finest, strongest, hardest working human beings I've ever met, and I used to be a commercial construction superintendent, so I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And let these people go home with some tax-free money.
Mm-hmm.
We could create some programs, and that's better than law enforcement.
What's this going to do to our workforce?
Well, it's going to have a deleterious effect.
Yeah,
it's not. This is not good. I mean, when I go around, I have. You know, I've got a construction background and all this mm-hmm. stuff. So when I go around concrete and tile and roofing and all these things and agricultural stuff, and I grew up in West Texas, and George Bush knew this, and he even talked about it in the White House, is, you know, you can't pave a mile of highway and you can't run a livestock operation. And there's so many without help, and that help needs to come from, it used to come seasonally from Mexico, and the people would go home, and they could got a bum tooth, you can go back to Chihuahua and get some of the best dentistry in North America. Hmm. So we were better situated and accommodating to migration in the 60s, 70s, 80s until they came up with these crazy plans in the 90s, and we're still paying the price for that.
What's the future of humane borders?
I hope that it will continue to do the job that it's doing and do it exceedingly well, and they've done it with a legitimation and an approval of the community. And, you know, the government came in here 3 or 4 times and tried to prosecute people for being good deed doers, and I think that Humane Borders and the Samaritans and No More Deaths and other organizations mm-hmm. have created it so that the federal government can't come in here and get a jury that's going to convict anybody of doing being a good deed doer. Mm-hmm. So I think we've had an impact, and I think they need to keep doing that and doing it well. The future that I would envision for them and or other organizations that would emerge is to do public policy advocacy. And, you know, I want to say I'm voting for Mo Goldman. I want to endorse his campaign after 40 years, and I've worked with members of Congress from Brownsville to California, and now we're going to get an immigration practicing attorney that knows what the law is and knows what the consequences are, knows what the ill effects are, knows what the agenda is, and somebody that has the capacity to make the right sound bite and put down those that oppose that and to expose their hypocrisy. So here I am. I'm voting for Mo Goldman.
And Mr. Goldman is a Democrat who is hoping that he will be facing off Tim Steller against Juan Ciscomani.
Correcto. Yeah. Juan Ciscomani, newly endorsed by Donald Trump.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts, Reverend? Will this a new activism perhaps being created?
I hope so. I hope so. I'm writing a book right now on immigration policy reform, and I hope we can counter some of the fake news and the fake mm-hmm. laws and the executive orders and say, no, let's change the politics, let's show a little empathy, and let's show a little compassion, and let's find another way.
All right, Reverend Robin Hoover, a social ethicist who has worked with migrating people along the Southwest border for 40 years, and he is the founder of Humane Borders, which will be celebrating its anniversary, its 25th anniversary this weekend. Thank you, Reverend Hoover. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Let's talk with Tim Steller in segment number 3, which is coming up here after we take a quick break on the Buckmaster Show Friday edition.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare.
savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Thanks to the Reverend Robin Hoover. Good to see Reverend Hoover. We've had him on the phone. Tim Steller from the Star is with me. Had Reverend Hoover occasionally on the phone, but it's the first time he's been back in studio with me in about 5 years. Always makes an interesting interview.
Mm-hmm. You got that Texas accent way of talking. That's I don't know.
And
he says
enforcement will not work in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, that's to be proven still. Mm-hmm. I'm certain that there are ways that policies can drive outcomes, you know, at least in the short term. You mm-hmm. know, we can see that right now, that migration, I mean, it had already slowed way down under Biden in the last year, but now it's practically nil or very, very low. But, you know, the demand to cross mm-hmm. will increase over time.
Let's touch on a few of the items you've been writing about. There's five candidates that will be taking, that would like to sit in for or fill the immediate vacancy of Councilman Fimbres, who is retired because of health reasons.
Yeah.
Is it your understanding that those five do not seek to run for office?
Yes, that is my understanding, mm-hmm. and that the council will pick someone who serves out the term, which should take them into December, and then step aside for whoever wins the election in November.
The RTA, a lot of confusion going on over the leadership there. You have two different factions.
And, yeah.
Whether Farhad, the leader,
Mughimi yeah. mm-hmm.
Will be staying on. We'll see. But we're going to do a deep dive on that on Monday's show with Ted Maxwell, General Ted Maxwell, who's a member of the 9-member board. And also, I think City Councilman Paul Cunningham is going to be joining him. Where do you see this could go either way as far as the future of RTA Next?
Yeah, so right now, RTA Next exists as a kind of a plan that's been worked up but is not in final form. And it's a plan that they want to put to voters before the current half-cent sales tax expires in June next year. The thing is that as it stands, the plan doesn't have much support from the city of Tucson, and city of Tucson voters are crucial to its passage because outside suburban voters tend to vote more negatively on this sort of thing. So they need Tucson voters to make this pass. They don't have the final plan yet. And part of what is causing and has been for several years causing consternation on the part of the city is they really don't like Farhad Mughimi, the executive director. They feel like he has been biased against them and
favoring the smaller communities, Sahuarita, Marana, Oro Valley.
Right. And, you know, there is some sense to that politically speaking, because the way the board votes, it's a one vote per jurisdiction.
Right.
So you want to please, you know, the majority of the jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And the city of Tucson happened to be the odd man out to some extent in some of the decisions over the years. Right now, though, so what happened was there's been several changes in board membership. And as a result of that, there is possibly or even probably a majority who would want to dismiss him as executive director. That's led to kind of what looks to me like last gasp maneuvers to keep him in place. Joe Winfield, the
mayor
of Oro Valley, who is the chair of the RTA board, is trying to delay and lay out. He told me he's not trying to delay, so I should clarify mm-hmm. that. But he is proposing a process that would delay consideration of
until there is legal representation, because the legal representation has now left.
Right,
the RTA.
It's a whole.
It's a very complicated thing, but the bottom line is, a change in leadership, new direction might be good or it might not. Who
right.
knows?
I mean, Winfield says he thinks stable leadership is good, whereas right. others, including myself, have argued that a change of leadership is more likely to lead to a plan that will get passed by voters. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the clock is running and voters may vote on this. Well, they've got to pretty much March of next year.
Yeah,
is
right.
The deadline.
They've got to firm up a plan. And Ted Maxwell, who you will talk to Monday, said to me, you know, my commitment is to put a plan to the voters. They get to decide. And you know, that's his priority.
What's going on at the University of Arizona with the pushback to the president, the new president, about the U of A took off all reference to DEI very quickly from the website, washed it clean. There are a lot of professors who think the U of A has given in too quickly.
Yeah, I think broadly speaking, there's a desire on the part of many faculty members that the University of Arizona administration stand up like some other university administrations around the country have done. Against some of the efforts by the Trump administration to kind of, take power over the universities and how they practice a lot of
things. You're talking about Ivy League and the Big Ten, where they're very well, have deep pockets. The U of A has said they could lose up to $1 billion in federal funding.
Yeah, I mean, it's that, you know, there's an argument for conservatism and not standing out. You don't want to get whacked. On the other hand, you know, if you oppose what the president's doing, and that's making an assumption, then it looks kind of cowardly not to stand up. And they have had the opportunity to, in the sense that there is a nationwide letter signed by, I think, around 500 university presidents
and
now.
And growing by the day.
That is
actually
protesting some of the Trump administration's acts against
the
universities.
And the University of Arizona has not signed.
Not just the University of Arizona president, but all
three
state
NAU,
university,
ASU.
Yeah, yep. Arizona presidents. So, it's probably not a coincidence, I'm guessing. They you know, we got a state legislature that's run by Republicans, and they don't want to offend those guys.
All right, Tim, we're going to have to wrap it up. What do you have coming up in the paper on Sunday?
Working on a piece about that, the efforts to interdict drugs versus the federal efforts to stop demand for illegal drugs, and how we're doing a lot of one while hurting efforts in the other way.
All right, Tim Stellar, we will look for your work at the Arizona Daily Star, and we'll look for your work on this side of the table when you are one of the guest hosts when I take off for vacation starting Thursday of next week. You'll be one of the guest hosts, and you always do a great job. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Looking forward to it.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Coming up next, Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive. Ken Carr is waiting in the wings to tell us what's going on this weekend.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, Silver City and Grant County makes an enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Now here's Ken Carr from 101.7 The Drive. Ken's got, he always has great information, but he excels when it comes to weekend activities. Hey, Ken.
Ken is in weekend.
Weekend is ready to do it.
All right. We'll start with an event this evening. It's Sabores de Tucson. I apologize for my rather poor Spanish. Best Mexican Food in America Festival.
Oh.
And that is at the Westin La Paloma, and from 5:30 to 8:30, they've set up food tasting stations, and it's organized into regional, like the regions around Mexico. Mm-hmm. You know, the food is different, just like in the U.S.
Sure, Oaxaca has their own cuisine. The northern part excels in their particular genre of food.
Yeah. Exactly. And so they're setting it up the same way. So you can either get a taste of a lot of areas of Mexico or just kind of pick your own.
Uh-huh.
Plus, they'll have drinks and music and art. So that sounds like a fun event.
And the only requirement, Ken, probably is bring an appetite.
And maybe a bib. FC Tucson having their first soccer match of the season. That is coming up tomorrow night at the Kino Sports Complex, the North Stadium. And that is versus Selección Tucson. Tucson, probably. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Duel in the Desert 3 is happening today and tomorrow at Casino del Sol. And it's the Antique Automobile Club of America having a car show.
Wow.
And it's older cars, and they're quality vehicles to go see. Mm-hmm. And they'll be judging the finest original and restored antique cars and motorcycles on the planet. That's how they're advertising
it. I'll tell you, car enthusiasts in this town have a field day. It seems like we always have a lot of car shows.
Well, I think part of it, too, is the weather is nice.
Yeah.
So if you have an antique or a restored car, you can take it
outside.
Show
it off. Put down the top, ready to go.
Absolutely. Props and Pints Beer Fest is happening tomorrow night, 4 to 8 p.m. at the Pima Air and Space Museum. So this is an interesting combination. Mm-hmm. It's a beer festival where aviation, military history, and craft brews collide. Nothing like flying a plane after having a couple beers, right?
Yes, sir.
Couple other events. It's free comic book day tomorrow.
Okay.
At Heroes and Villains, which is on Broadway, 4533 East Broadway, from 10 to 7. And then tomorrow's National Comic Book Day.
Mm.
So this is how they're celebrating, giving away over 10,000 free comic books. And it spans from superheroes to manga, plus costume characters will be there, exclusive collectibles. Sounds like a lot of fun. If you've always wanted to get your own comic book, here's your chance to do it. And one other thing, the unusual market with oddities and things to shop is at the Coalition Space on 7th Street. That's on Sunday from 11 to 6.
Something tells me you collected comic books.
I did when I was a kid, but my collection got small because my parents didn't want me to take up too much space. So I think it got to be 5 or 6 of them.
Okay. Thank you, Ken Carr. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Thanks to Ken Carr. Thanks to Tom on the other side of the glass. Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody a great weekend.